Hello, happy new year, everyone. Flying for a team. Bring it on, life. Every precarious safe haven, every toiling accomplished goal. Arcadians, children of the pre-lunar era. Your struggles, my struggles, entwining around each other. Pain sweetening through sharing. Waiting through centuries of darkness for a miracle to shine. Beams of dreams escaping the narrow bars of reality. Our labored sweat, our bitter patience. Dissolving our struggles into the salt of the tear. Bring it on, life, every shatterable righteous law, every daggered jubilant victory. Agatho demons, children of the absolute word. Your truths, my truths, powering around each other. Eternal debt for the unjust. Eternal gratitude for the just. Lightning condemnation of injustice. Defying mortality, determined to win all battles. Fiery anger sung by muses. Kindling our truths into the tip of the flame. Bring it on, life, every fluctuating precious bond, every undulating sweet desire. Heteroluminescence, children of the solar cosmos. Your light, my light, shimmering around each other. Distancing in cold alienation, connecting in warm communion. Our sacred mating reflecting infrared wavelengths. Invisible bright frequencies, shapes and colors becoming visible, absorbing and transmitting photons, rippling our light into the foam of the wave. Bring it on, life, every delicate fine-spun artistry. Every frenzied, blissful awakening. Dionysians, children of a primordial orbit. Your passions, my passions, creating around each other. Art flooding with hues of emotions. Every aesthetic touch guaranteeing endless splendor. Ideal voices and thoughts. Soaring like seagulls between land and sea, carrying elevated ideas through space and time, raising our passions into the upsurging of the spirit. Bring it on, life, every vulnerable, steadfast vision, every evanescent, ultimate flight. Apollonians, children of the winged evolution. Your quintessence, our quintessence, goldening around each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra. There's a line in that. Your truths are truths powering around us. Now, that's down to the next human being to keep that going. So, Rosalind Crowley, share your truths.
Thank you.
Is that okay?
I'm right here. Just checking on the mic there. Thank you. Since Meg's Cretan gave a shout out to me, I want to say a shout out to her and thank you to her brother Joe, who gave me 2 hours of storytelling down in Cretan's hotel this last week. My poem that I'd like to read tonight is called When I Was Young. When I was young, my mother never owned a washing machine. She had two hands that lathered soap, then scrubbed, rinsed, and squeezed out water. Cold as ice, she shook them until the wrinkles dropped. With pegs between her lips, she carefully released one at a time. Garments were hung out to dry, where wind, then rain, and wind again would make the clean clothes fly. The finer lace she would lay flat. Later, she would steal a look from time to time to see if dried. At end of day, she unpegged the trove of clothes and brought them in to fold. Familiar scene across Ireland. Another day, another way, a mother showed her love. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosalind. I read a book a number of years ago that talked about how our mental health is affected by the modern world. And one of the things that they pointed out in the book was that many practices, such as washing hands by clothes, are now gone out of our life, including walking to and from work. And those meditative practices being taken away from us as such was detrimental in some ways. I'm not suggesting we all go back to washing clothes by hand. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just pointing out that it's good for your mental health. No. There's a woman here who has a preteen and a teen at home and she needs to get back to them. So we've bumped her up the open mic list. Jemmy, well, let me get this right. Kemi GS.
So it's about my mother as well. And I suppose it's not really about mental health, but about mental decline and maybe accepting it. So it's called 90 in December. If only I'd frozen you at 50, caught that determined stride, unencumbered by the severe limp, one hip rebellious to your hourglass, protruding bulge in a liquid flow, though neighbours and acquaintances marvelled at your speed, even years struggled to keep pace. If only I'd frozen you at 50, I could carry you around like a worthy monument, life-sized icon for grandchildren to adore. Before the stroke, before the weight, before Honeygate, before septicemia, pneumonia, before constant falling and the undeniable, perpetually denied D. Now your determination pushes forth sentences with the force of a zealous academic, but your voice is faint, encumbered by goita and dither. Words lose their way, right in the middle of a simple tale. Feet mimic, shuffling behind that frame, headed to the bathroom, shocked to find themselves in the bedroom. If only I'd frozen you at 50, my children would have worshipped at your feet. Your encyclopedic love of the classics, vibrant fingers painting keys with complex rhythms, your vast multisyllabic vocabulary, wielding both English and Yoruba with a proverb for every twist and strike of life. But now they ask, what did grandma say? Why does she have a piano but cannot play? Your will, as relenting as a motorway flattening the countryside, you would have put them straight. But now, bent over, eating your onion, you smile, fixed onto the middle distance, the radio on. Hymns hedge you, scriptures rise like thurible smoke, paving paths to pain-free worship. Of course you know you're losing it. Brain has sidestepped its frontal lobe, but mouths that see your warm eyes cannot resist an upturn. If I'd frozen you at 50, preserved that speed, it would have injured more joy, always too busy for school plays and sports days, rants stronger than the currents of the Niger. Grandchildren would have drowned like us in a merciless surge. But now, we can bob in warm hugs and tender touch. Now we can celebrate audacity, ever fueled to accomplish potential they said you did not have. Yes, we mourn the shrivel, we mourn the battle, but look, we are turned out in the bling of your histories, patient with relentless repetitions, our ears ring from your bright, continued declarations. I will be 90 in December. I am 90 this year. Today, I'm 90.
Thank you, Kemi. And I would say that's about mental health, because I think one of the things that we don't maybe pay enough attention to is that people surrounded by that surround people who are unwell, whether that's, you know, end of life, or whether they're dealing with, as Molly's first speech touched on, a child who's struggling with an eating disorder, or in my own case, my family, trying to live with what was at times a raving lunatic. So yeah, lovely piece. Thank you very much. And on that wonderful note, upbeat Paul Dillon. Is that okay?
That seems okay. I have two short poems I'd like to read. The first is F F F F F G. After months of campaigning, they changed the name of Passport Express to Post Passport, reflecting the slower turnaround times associated with post applications. And in departure lounges as villa owners and visa holders clamor for escape, thanks are expected. When asked what's next, A&E to wait and see, the homeless will influence decisions. Have you seen our camps of porta cabins behind fences? But the question on everyone's mind is, will the new postcards still say greetings from sunny Ireland? Or the dead don't speak, but their bones sing history, and the dying will be heard. Spring is the smile of the many. Over the belt of navy suits, white or pale blue shirts, black shoes, side parted hair, he shunned Armani, laid gloves on the bourgeoisie. His baggy trousers were solidarity, ill fitting shirts were pans of bread. Personal style was his liberty and threat to national security. In a world transformed, red and green returned, and we danced like freedom fighters at COVID's end. If we rose like flowers, his general triangular shoulders would find the missing piece. Spring is the smile of the many on the corner of his mouth. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Nothing to do with your poem, but I like the shoes, man. Follow those shoes, Daniel. Follow those shoes, Daniel.
So, before I moved here, my closest connection to Ireland was my grandmother. And she would talk about how she was from Mayo. She would talk about how she sailed from Cove when she was 17, alone and malnourished. But she didn't talk about very much else. So now that I'm here, I'm trying to learn. I'm reading, I'm paying attention, I'm listening, I'm watching. And this poem is about that. I asked my grandmother when I was young if it was the famine that changed her course. She slapped me playfully as if I was cheeky, not merely ignorant of history. And she went on to tell me tales of her father returning from winter work with blood sausages to make up the absence. And she would greet us on those mornings, frying up leftover breads nearly stale so we could go off with the taste of something, or ensuring that we ate more than we need whenever we'd stop to visit so we could return for a healthy hug. Over the years, we learned when we celebrate, it's over cake. When we connect, it's at a feast. After her funeral, we fed our sorrows with sandwiches in the church basement, another lifetime away. And now I'm working on simplicity, filling needs with simpler joys, basic ingredients with better spice, finding nourishment in the written word as I listen to you express your hunger for feeling softer than the trauma. Another who felt too big for the world and sacrificed to be something less, numbing yourself with nothing. I don't know what brought this on, but I think I understand now. I've always had enough. I came from a land of excess, and still, even I wake to my stomach growling. Thank you.
Very nice, Daniel. Very nice indeed. We're going to jump onto Zoom. The country you left, Pam Campbell.
Hi, y'all.
Hopefully this won't be as complicated as the last time. You there, Pam?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I wanted to thank Paul. This poem was born in his imagery creative writing class that I took, and the Blue Mondays group that chewed on it as well. So here we go. A good disturbance. Raindrops drum gray earth black, releases petrichor. Petra, Greek for stone, and ichor, the golden fluid coursing the veins of the gods, musk the air. I climb the mountain high above Troublesome Creek, seeking that which cannot be seen. Breath labored, heart pounding, ground and sky dizzy spins. Will I die on this mountain this day? Still I push upward, serpentine sideways walking, a how-to tip earned in an unexpected slide. And then, when my body can bear no more, earth spreads like a welcoming picnic blanket to deer clip meadow surrounded by yet undisturbed native trees. American beech stubborn holds its fall leaves, whisper sings its past and winter winds, and rust tinges summer. Red maple blends against white pine, understoried by eastern redbud, heart-shaped leaves. Is that a pawpaw, or memory wishing it so? Mountain breathes a stream of cave-like cooled air, brushes cheek and teases sweat-curled hair. Wood thrush haunting Iole threads with hooded warblers, weeda 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 teo. Carolina Wren tea kettles her response. One very mortal woman weeps. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. We're kind of on a roll in that part of the world. JJF is next.
Yeah, I have a three-letter moniker as well, so there we go. But yeah, I do have to mention, Stan already kind of brought this up, but I have a show at the Franciscan Well called Prosimos 5, which is a poetry show. It's free. You should come out. It's January 25th, Wednesday, at the upstairs room of the Franciscan Well. It's me. It's my friend Jamie O'Shea. It's Fergus Costello, who most of you know, and surprise mystery guest. I have to talk to some of you tonight and figure that out. But anyway. But I'm going to do one most of you have heard, but some of you haven't, so there we go. This poem is short. This poem is sad. And this poem is about sex. This poem is called Short Sad Sex Poem. We hadn't seen each other in some time. Yet you sent me a risque text last week. Damn. Asking if I was fine. It's currently 3 a.m. And you do like a bit of late night light nicotine. So I light up a pair of cigarettes after sex. We each take a puff slick with sweat. I see you blush and know that for you the rush of regret comes next. Neither one of us came, so the unspoken question still hangs. What does come next? That went unanswered, and you took the next cab home. So this is it, my short, sad sex poem.
Thank you, JGF. 25th of January, free poetry. If you're a poet and you want to say some of your words and not get paid for it, have a chat with him. You might get paid for it, like, but that's the way the world works now, isn't it? We're looking for a poet. We'll do it for free. 1,000 hands up in the air immediately. We value ourselves so much. Now, 25th of January, he's looking for a guest poet, so have a chat with him. We're still in America, are we, Abigail? Are we still in America? Sorry a second, I've introduced her incorrectly. I have to give her a full title as written down on the open mic list. Please welcome Abigail Kay.
Okay. I wrote this for a class that I took this semester, so my teacher said it was okay, so hopefully she was right. Letter to the widow, seen in the grocery store for the first time since March. Were you the one that found the body? I don't mean cut it down, or put two fingers to its neck in search of churning blood, or bent down to feel for empty breath on a cheek, or dragged it in like a cat playing with a limp chipmunk, tail bobbing up and down as the cat gnaws, like it were still alive. I mean, was it you who, in the sterile, even light of the morgue, stared into his blank face and claimed his bloated blue body, saying with a wobbling smile, "That's him, that's my love." When the wind returned, did it blow up from the north, stinging, like falling through ice on a lake, ice that was always meant to cave in, like waking up to a pitcher of water in your face, like breathing for the first time and inhaling water? Or did it feel like spring, like pushing flopping wet strings of hair out of your face, like catching a glimpse of sunlight sparkling against the surface of water and pushing up against the silty bottom with your toes, like coming up for air and being met with bird song? Did you grab at it, desperate and panicked for the breath of a god you call yourself, a breath you'd been bending down to hear with wax in your ears? Or did it drift into your lap, a falling hickory leaf floating down to kiss your hands and pull you out of bed? The death of a star starts at the center and works its way out, leaving giants in its wake that scream and rail and howl until they explode in a burst of soundless light, and they suck in for air one last time as their love work settles like space ash. I wonder, did you? Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Patricia Walsh.
This is kind of broadly about mental health. So it's called Thin Autobiographical. The thin autobiographical erasing its journey. The goodly concern runs over this time. Visiting on a job, a technical necessity. Running into avoided scenarios are worth telling. Feeling rain on the skin covered by hands. The preferred form, drunk eventually. The defunct visionary, a geographical prerogative. Sorting vicarious debacles in jig time. Advising the odds to the slitted wrist. The facetious old boss off fighting what's corner. No time to worry, associates excused. Stalked into a corner, spiking the disease. Copyright costs and a biting ill wind. Purchase sketches for friends. Needing to sleep, miffed at favoritism, walking a heartbeat. Writing out of a boredom-shaped hole, instinct aside, instantly gratified, a question of taste. dangerously eating dinner without the meat. Electrified blood congealed in his own poison. Attractive persuasions over selling drink. Not minding issues, going straight for the kill. Fighting soft veins for the needle to fly through. Loving at north, thrown by the light. A martyr for the application, ragged as it is. Streaming through blood, needing its window. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Actually, when Patricia came up to the microphone, I realised Patricia has a couple of books out as well, which reminded me that I forgot to remind you that Luke said to me at the break his books are still available at €15 each, but he'd quite gladly do a deal and give you 2 for £30 tonight, just for tonight. A special deal. Isn't that right, Luke? No. Can we have Philip Spillane next, please?
Thank you very much. So I'm playing around with this imagery at the moment. It's called Salmon. It's based off the Salmon of Knowledge, but in a different interpretation. And it's a poem that needs a lot of work, but feedback is welcome. It made me go transparent when the tip of my tongue was cut by a shard of glass. It was hot, a scale of a salmon's coat. The world became technicolor when I closed my eyes, a kaleidoscope spun. But if I focused, I saw salmon leap against a rainbow waterfall into velvet and indigo. The blood was few. People asked what happened, but I saw through them. When I sucked my thumb, I saw the lie behind every laugh and the shameful love crash behind a wrinkle, the type that a person is confused about. When my company fell from sight, they became shadows in the dark. Their thoughts layered over and over and over, and I did not trust anything. I always doubt the answers, feared it. I got 8 fingers and 1 extra thumb and a golden touch. See the scar where the glass bit me. The same salmon, hands on the window of Maureen's pub. I remember her eyes the most. It was a window covered with damp. If I could kiss each brow, then our lips would be covered in knowledge. Only it's the right thumb, scarred and confused. Thanks.
Excellent, Philip. Work in progress. He's looking for feedback. Don't give the feedback from the open mic if you're on it between now and the end of the night. Just read your poem. You can do the feedback later on over a pipe somewhere else. I say that because Carl Holden is next and he's got a tendency to get excited. Isn't that right, Carl?
How are we doing that? So this poem, I promise, is not a threat.
Oh,
jeez. I'm writing a series, and I'm actually going to get this comic book artist to illustrate it, so it's a bit of fun. But it's in collaboration with these guys called OX Tulu, who are a Cthulhu-based web production house. There's some stuff going on that I'm just here to write stuff. That's all it is. But this one is called The Poet. I have another few. One of them is called Grandma. I love Grandma. Grandma, it wouldn't work to read on the mic, but she's an old lady who gets possessed by the devil. She's fucking great crack. But this one's The Poet, and it's a poem, so I thought I might bring it down here. Maybe next month, appropriately for Valentine's Day, I might come down to episode 2, where we summon Cthulhu. The city is a mausoleum. My room is as a tomb of dreams. The insurance payout's nearly spent. I am 6 weeks behind the rent. There is a rat inside the wall. He does not pay the rent at all. My work is dry, but I am not. I drink the hours off the clock. I rise closer to dusk than dawn. Her ring is all I've left to pawn. It is as heavy in my hand as memories I cannot stand. in the pawn shop down on Wednesday Street, beneath a flock of old guitars, I sell a fragment of my soul. In the lonely, sad bazaar, the money's fine, a month of rent, or a fortnight high in Merlin's bar. There is a book enshrined behind the glass, I cannot tear my eyes away. A notebook, I hear my own voice ask, how much? I hear my new voice say. A ripple as of hot desert sand passes through my beating head. The owner puts it in my hands. His eyes say things he hasn't said. I take my wages to the bar. Of course I did. I always do. I sit beside a wrinkled tart, two stuffy suits, a fruit machine. There is scotch inside the jar. The jukebox plays a tragic theme. I wonder how they keep themselves from despair, the calling void. I raise a glass to no one else, a bitter little toast to joy. My joy was her, for her to write. Tomorrow, at the poetry night, they'll laugh when I stand to the mic. The notebook burns inside my coat, like cash, a gun, a scab, a loose unstitching thread. I take it out. The curious inscription says, this soul unto Nyarlathotep. It seems a little like a game. Above the script, I write my name. I never fight. It's not my thing. Yet I've never felt quite so alive. It's not my nature, never have I been as I was in Merlin's bar last night. I unplugged the jukebox, punched the tart, knocked the false teeth from her head, kicked the suits and bit the barman, glassed the doorman, turned and fled. I ran, full gone and pumping sweat. I broke the windows on the street. I felt a fire in my heart. The fury was so honey sweet. I sang out loud in ancient poems. I stole a policeman's horse and rode it home. The Navajo have words for me. Some know me by another name. I pour my poison in your soul. You will never be the same. A tragic life was yours, my friend. Your tragedies have yet to end. What's yours is mine. What's mine is you. Rest, we have such work to do. I woke last night in sleepless dream. I wrote in an unceasing stream. Nothing was as though it seemed. In hell the devil heard me scream. I stalk the city all the day. I cannot rest or eat a crumb. The people do not see the power. They know not what I've become. Now I'm down the open mic, speaking the forbidden words. The ground beneath me starts to crack. The horizon bends and curls. I call the ancient ones from sleep. They rise as terrors from the deep. The audience politely clap. They click their fingers in their seats. The void opens a dreadful rift. They fall into his cruel beak. Azazoth has come to eat. From here I shall do as I like. I take a bow. I drop the mic. I button up my coat and dust it down. I leave the wreckage on a cloud. The fire and police are on their way. They'll blame the thing on gas, of course. I feel a rush. The strangest power, and only fragments of remorse.
Thank you. Again, not a time.
If that felt a little autobiographical to several people in the room, I'm sure it was completely accidental. Not all poets behave like that. I tell you, Cal, will you go away and write a poem that is titled "This Poem Is Not a Threat"? That's genius. This poem is not a threat. Okay, we're going to back on Zoom. Massimo is next.
Hey, can you hear me okay? Yes. All right, good. That's what's up. So, if I had one verse for all that I've learned, I'd say what is real is real and what's not's absurd. The truth is beyond any name called or heard. One could even say God is too small a word. If I had another verse for more that I could learn, it's just how to be happy and let the world turn. To be born's a gift, not a fortune one can earn. If you think you don't deserve it, that is yours to discern. And if I had another verse, for what I was forced to learn. I'd say that a hand in the fire is sure to burn. Wisdom's not a lover to be courted and then spurned. She's more like a mother whose love is warm but stern. And if I had another verse for what I never learned, it's how the existence of difference first occurred. Why is there darkness? How is light first obscured? And why does pleasure turn to pain when returned? But sometimes all I learned is that I learned a lesson. Wiser than the answer is to wisely choose the question. How can I ask for secrets of the earth and heaven if I've never even seen my own face with no reflection? But these are just points I've observed, made guessing. Proverbs are turned into words, but made stepping. I heard wisdom can't just be served, it takes testing. So anything I serve, I've been served while taste testing. But I don't want any more wisdom, its weight's pressing. As gray grows long in my beard, my days lessen. As a child, I would play and pray my days lengthened. But now more than then, innocence is the greatest blessing. As a child, I would pray that I would strengthen. But now I just pray that love is strong enough to save me while I'm resting. And thank you so much. Always an honor to be here. Peace. All right.
Thank you, Massimo. Next up is the man who is running a poetry film course in Ashton School very shortly, Colm Scully.
Thanks, Dan. I think the people taking down the Christmas decorations have moved onto the street. But it's cold out tonight, so it could snow, you'd never know. This poem is called The Big Snow. And just like someone read a poem a while ago, it's actually about my mother and a conversation I had with my mother. She died last year, but she was 92 when she died. But this is called The Big Snow. Do you remember the big snow, I ask? You remember all of them. 47. Horses pull coffins over frozen ground. 2 weeks before a man can be buried. The wells frozen. The army tied to barracks while the turf ran out. You're a typing school, Miss Lombard's, making your way up Patrick's Hill. Your father's socks pulled over patent pumps, digging your heels into the ice. Shorthand copy squeezed under your arm, dreaming of your first job. 82. E.S. Beeman out on the pylons. Soldiers deliver water off the back of trucks. The Commons Road 100-metre ski slope for fertiliser bags and school sacks. You keep your youngest home, a housewife 20 years. You hold the house while we're off playing. The mobile grocery van arrives through heavy drifts with spuds and sausages, your saviour from Fair Hill. And in the last, 2018, schools close for 5 days, no bread. Queues for wine outside the service station. You phone to tell us, stay indoors, don't cross the city. The roads are treacherous, cars abandoned, a child was killed in the fall in Farnry. It is worse than 47. You're nearly 90. Your peers are dead. You won't see weather like this again. The slushy mountains tall to black along the roadside.
Thanks, Colin. I remember the 82 one. We were snowboarding on, I don't know, trays or something up in the airport. It was great fun. Sue Blue. Is next.
Thanks very much. I brought a poem that I wrote at one of the workshops in the Winter Warmer festival. What was her name again? Yairin, thank you very much. Yeah, that was her workshop. And she had one prompt there. We were speaking about a poem, not forgetting all the names, a poem, I should be knowing whose poem, on glass delusion, and the actual glass delusion is actually a term for a mental illness where a person believes that they're made of glass. And this arose in the Middle Ages when glass was invented and afflicted, among others, Charles VI of France. And this prompt inspired this poem, Glass Delusion. When I was young, I believed my face a page, transparent, each line projecting emotions like words, spilling my secrets. Schoolmates poked fears and loves without mercy, dragging frustration and anger to light, smashing my vulnerability to ground, stomped into muddy puddles. I wept as I cloaked myself in frizzy wild hair, hiding what remains to this day. My heart diaphanous to the laser sharp eyes, my soul dissected by their measures. If I were of glass, I would fragment to a zillion splinters beneath the x-rays of the entitled, shards so stabbing you'd bleed. I shatter, crystal crash crescendos my cry. Clothe me in darkness, kill the light.
Very nice, Roz, very nice indeed. Now we're moving into a different stage on the open mic. This is the stage where people have rock star names. First name is Roxanne. Only one name, Roxanne.
Sorry, the poem disappeared. There we go. So for the open mic, I told you not to believe anything. The five-word challenge, I told you not to believe anything. You can believe everything of this one. And it's just a kind of backup of the last week, and I'm going to try not to cry, but it's very emotional. And it's actually it's in English and it rhymes, so I keep progressing every time I participate here, so I'm glad. It's a 6 minutes melody. Please God, it soothes my anxiety. A fear woke me thrice nightly. Will the plane leave without me? I looked at myself thinking, you're tiny. But the curves came and I'm happy. Distance did help with you, Daddy. Your Christmas gift is, I'm sorry. A world opens for me to be, likewise as for seven puppies. Earth's rejoice for 2023. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roxanne. Now, winning the five-word challenge has terrible effects on people. Some people decide that they no longer want to be known by their actual name on the open mic. They decide they're going to reinvent themselves and no longer be Cedric, but be the claustrophage or something. What is it? The claustrophage? Well, how do you pronounce it? You'll have to tell us when you get up here. Anyway, our current five-word challenge champion under a new guise, Cedric.
That's one way to botch it. It's claustrophage.
Yeah, go on. Explain.
Actually, it doesn't really have meaning. It's not really a word, but it's
like
more
rock stuff. That's it.
Exactly.
Cedric does not have meaning.
My mom says that too. No, it's a. It's staying down. It's an introspection on what really fuels me to write, and the conclusion was basically that I like gnawing at my inner boundaries to basically find new things about myself. So basically those small enclosed spaces within. So claustro, which is the enclosed space, and phage for eating them, or the claustrophage. This one is inspired from a real event, but I'm not that terrible of human being. Also, the other thing is the title is inspired of something that happens a lot in France. If you go to a hair salon, they tend to have very silly names that are actually puns, for including the word hair basically in it, and it's very silly. So this one is titled Adult Hair. Slender, stretching down, even, irregular. I can't find the end yet. You haven't noticed. It's beautiful, if I must answer myself candidly. Unlike its tip, my feelings are split. Should I tell you? I want to tell you, but I also want to look at it more, wonder at the sparkles of the light it catches and releases, and the memories it triggers. Heavy breath and the rhythm of waves on the hidden strands. You wouldn't enjoy it. We should try it sometimes. Because I want to stay in your heart and you out of mine, I will show you the streaming blonde hair. It's missing its roots, just like our problem. Your confusion is to me enough pain, so I will explain. I don't know where it comes from.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Claustrophage. Now, this next reader doesn't have a rock star name, but they are a rock star. Jim Crickard. Don't start singing, Pete.
Thank you kindly, Stan. So this poem I'm going to do is going to be in the next Cork Words anthology. It's called A Cyborg Tries Online Dating with Grindr. Target identified, discreet elderly gentleman effaced by Microsoft Paint. Compromising user's Facebook account, intimating interest. Good evening, Mr. Walsh. I am interested in making your acquaintance. Your feline pet is aesthetically pleasing. How is your wife? Mr. Walsh replies that he got lost on the internet. User denying mating advances. Blocking Mr. Walsh. Subject is trying to deflect from sexuality or is technologically inept. The truth does not interest me. Running diagnostics for finding love. Create enticing profile. Option one, topless photograph of self in bathroom mirror. Memo, contact manufacturer for muscle upgrade. Option two, photo of self imbibing alcohol with human companions. Error, do not have any human companions. Option three, photograph of self smiling with Mr. Walsh's feline pet photoshopped into my arms. Image uploaded and approved. Phase three, users are sending me images of their pelvic appendages. Scanning response protocol. User behavior defies my programming. Responding to users with images of my serial number and headphone jack. Users are blocking me. Interest expressed by one software engineer. My interest is not reciprocated. Potential for gaslighting too high. Users are online, but nobody's writing to me. Initiating self-doubt sequence. Considering deletion of Grindr, Conversations initiated, 1.7 million. Reciprocated, 12. All users have initiated ghosting rejection strategy. Exception, the software engineer contacts me every day, despite my lack of response. Love not found on Grindr. No connection available. No connection available. No connection available. Initiate stare out window wistfully sequence. I have one new message. Opening user profile. Subject has goofy expression and is wearing chef hat. Subject pictured with aesthetically pleasing feline with paws dipped in cake frosting. Attraction level spiking. Attraction meter malfunctioning. Digital heartbeat is racing. Opening message. Hello, fellow cyborg. My name is Model 54321i. But you can call me Roger. Would you like to converse in robotic code? Yes. 1,800 conversations completed in under 3 seconds. One new message from Roger. Unbelievable, you are the first person I've contacted since joining Grindr 0.5 minutes ago. Initiating joke sequence. In golfing terms, you have scored a hole in one. One new message from Roger. Here is a hot pic of my headphone jack. Thanks.
Any doubt that O'Veil has empathetic audiences was dispelled in the middle of that when we got a deep awe from the back of the room about a fictional robot trying to find love on Grindr. Oh, we're going to go online, rather appropriately, we're going to go online to Ryan Morgan for the next contribution.
Hi, everyone. Okay, so I'm a dad of three kids, and this is a poem about what I wish I'd said in one of those moments. It's called Parental Guilt. I'm sorry I'm always shouting. I'm sorry I interminably hector. I'm sorry I'm continually hounding. I'm sorry when I point out your errors. You're a capable and valuable person. Your best is better than my own. You're allowed to make a few errors, son. You're blessed as your mistakes make you grow. There's no law that says be good at everything or that perfection in all things must be maintained. You have talents in abundance beyond imagining, and you'll develop them according to your own aims. I lecture you at every opportunity about what you should and shouldn't do. Though I disavow my own advice with impunity, though I know I haven't a clue. I don't know who I think I am to so fearlessly take the high ground. At your age, I'd broken all but one of God's commands. In hypocrisy, I should drown. I was useless when I was at your age. I was constantly cloaking my terror. I was a weather vane of insecure rage. I was a liar who could have done better. You are a soul of character and principle. Your moral compass points to the North Star. You can be trusted under pressure to be ethical. Being good is encrusted into what you are. Shouting and critical commentary were woven on my familial heirloom. But you will pierce the generational tapestry, snip the thread of our cacophonous cocoon. You're more together than I was at your age. Hell, you're better than me right now. Just know that when I snarl in outrage, it's due to discerning my own inadequacy somehow. You're enough, though, more than enough. You're tough, but don't gnaw yourself rough. though I roar and huff, know your every atom is loved. There you go. That's good.
Thank you, Ryan. Great last line. Know your every atom is loved. Now, Shauna Lee Lynch.
Now, hello, everybody. I wrote this in the last 24 hours, so you can judge me accordingly. Like most people who wrestle with anxiety or depression, I have a great affiliation towards self-help books. And this is what this is about. I mentioned some names of self-help books, but I don't think you really need to know them to get it. Noon, January 2nd, the self-help section of Waterstones, my holy place, my Mecca. I come here often, usually I worship alone. Today a congregation has formed, must be the time of year. Like antelope at a watering hole, we have come here seeking nourishment. I hang back and observe the new parishioners. Everyone keeps their distance, surveying the titles in monastic silence. No one picks anything up, for that would reveal your ailment. I love the self-help section of Waterstones. Between these two shelves holds so much hope. It's like Lourdes. Here is a promise that you can get better. You can recover. Forgive yourself. Forgive your mother. You can find love. Find God. Get richer. Get stronger. Be happy. The self-help section of Waterstones is the perfect place to meet someone. Why wait until a few months in for the person to expose their neuroses? Just look at the book they're holding. It would save so much time. I'd like to live in the self-help section of Waterstones, form a cave beneath the new release table, like a stoic retail troll. I'd make a bed out of atomic habits and the unexpected joy of being sober. For substance, I'd tear pages from books and eat them. Words like abundance dissolve like candy floss. Manifest is chewy. Excess radiating causes heartburn. I'd hiccup back up gratitude. People could visit me, describe to me their grievances. I'd prescribe Big Magic or the new Brené Brown. I'd like to make love in the self-help section of Waterstones. Untamed, next to the subtle art of not giving a fuck. I could give birth in the self-help section of Waterstones. Create a whole new person, a new earth. I could die in the self-help section of Waterstones, come back an untethered soul, be reincarnated into the monk who sold his Ferrari. For anything here is possible. It's a liminal space, nirvana. The books have not yet been bought, not yet abandoned halfway through because they feel impossible to commit to. It has not yet been realized that the world is often trickier and more complex than some of these books seem to address. Or, these books really could change your life. Just one piece of advice could flip your whole perspective. These pages could be the catalyst to make your dreams come true. That's what's so fantastic about the self-help section of Waterstones. It's a portal into the unknown. We stand at the equilibrium of disappointment and glory. And it's beautiful that we've all found ourselves here at the start of another new year together, active in our pursuit of making our lives better. Thanks.
Oh, I too was that man. I'm just thinking what I went to Waterstones in January of 2008, yeah, with all my gift vouchers for Christmas to get a whole series of self-help books. That was when I began the journey of trying to handle depression. And what the two books I bought that day, I'm just thinking about somebody looking over their shoulder, were Understanding Depression and A Day Called Hope by Gareth O'Callaghan, which is a phenomenal read, right? But if you knew the content and you saw somebody buying, you'd be saying, okay, never, ever fucking hang out with them. So thanks, Shauna. Thanks, Shauna. So the weird things happen at the OVL. People adopt rock star names, and then you get these weirdos coming down from up the fucking country with rock star names and deciding they're not going to put their rock star name on the open mic. They've gone for the full handle, Stephen James Smith. The audacity of your man. SJS, SJS.
Cheers. My name's Stephen, like, you know. Cool, thanks. Actually, a book that really helped me, if you want another one for the self-help session, like I joke and I don't joke because it saved me life, is a book called Cancellations by David Weiss. And I bought about 30 copies of that in 2015 and gave it out to people because of the impact it had on me. And they're just like little essays, like 800 words on a word like robust, and you think, oh, I know what robust means. And then you read this and you kind of go, oh, fuck, okay. And it really helped me. And he's got another thing called The Poetry of Self-Compassion, which is about a half an hour talk. And you'll find that on SoundCloud in two parts like that. I listened to that a few times a year because I always forget these things. You have these epiphanies and then you fucking forget it all, you know. But anyway, I'll do a poem. And if anybody is around in Dublin, Wexford, Dublin or Belfast this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we have Buddy Wakefield, who was an amazing poet, like unbelievable. Paul helps get him out of Ireland in 2007. He won the World Poetry Slam Championships 3 times in a row, retired undefeated. Poetry Slam's a bit of a gimmick, but it's a bit of crack. It's a gateway drug into poetry, do you know what I mean? But he is unbelievable. He's absolutely exceptional. So if you're around this Thursday, Friday or Saturday, come along the tour. He's worth coming along to see. Anyway, this is a poem. There's been loads of poems about mothers and stuff like that. This is a poem that I wrote after a conversation I had with my dad, and I wrote it on St. Bridget's Day, and it's called Saintly Sister, because of this. Oh, to have another pair of eyes for a different perspective and ways of seeing this world. What colour would yours be? Mine, a greeny blue, a hue not lost on you. Teenage trauma led to a black eye and an eventual cataract, blurring my vision and depth of field. Ironic, poets are meant to be prophetic, but I didn't see that punch coming, nor did I expect to be knocked by the answer to my question. Would you like grandchildren? I asked my father. I'd have liked a daughter, he said. And with that, a loss I never knew existed, my unknown skin and blister, a sister, a figment of imagination, a regret, an unborn sibling, one to rival with, be the apple of his eye no matter how hard I try. So I write this for you, sister, on this saintly day, so I'll call you Bridget, Mary of the Gales, goddess of poetry, yarner of tales, singer of spring, druidess of oak, holy fire, smoke, teach me of brotherhood, sorority, take anything you want from me. I don't remember how we first met, because it never happened. But did you hide my bike? Help me with homework? Push me off the tree? Was I overbearing with my love, protecting you from your partner? Did I do unspeakable deeds when you told me what they'd done? Or was I overjoyed at being the godfather to your first son, making me an uncle? Would I make you an aunt? Who was told first? Or were we both there when cancer was uttered? Did we take it in turns going to the hospital? Are you younger or older, I, the pupil or the master? I'd selfishly rather die first than read at your funeral. Are you pagan in tradition, shining in bulk colours, white and silver for snow and ice, pale gold for the passing winter sun, jade green for the first flowers of spring, garnet red for the lambs to be born, amethyst for protection and the birthstone of February? With the sun's growing strength, you brightened each day, and here, you found me halfway between the solstice and equinox. I'm a straw boy to your cross, and I sense your healing at this time of rebirth. You've been born, revealing my blind ignorance. Sister, now I find all we have is the imagination to play happy families in the mind. One thing's for sure, though, I know you'd be kind. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Lovely teeth. No, I know that the way I'm going to announce this next person is incorrect, but I read it this way, and I just think it's great. Alexander the 10th. I know that, yeah. I know that. Just when I read it, it looked like Alexander the 10th, and I thought, that's amazing. Alexander Toth.
Yeah, it's Hungarian. Ah. Yeah. So this poem is called Wake Up. It's about kind of like when you go through emotional pain, like moments of going through emotional pain and like remembering difficult times from the past. Peace. I wonder what that feels like. All I feel is the volcano about to erupt. Its burning ashes standing in my way, like a wall made of crimson flames. But do I get burned? No. I fight. I walk right through. Nothing will hurt me. I tell myself I feel no pain, but internally, my screams echo like the most fierce storm in the night sky. What do I see? Red. What do I feel? Rage. Even confusion. But you cannot fight this rebellious storm. It wields its own dazzling power. Memories come flashing like 1,000 volts. When electric sparks ignite something explainable in me. It's like my mind works as a time machine, powered by those electric sparks, replaying those sorrowful memories, reminiscing about the past, like a live collage. What does it look like, you ask? Like a shattered heart of mosaic, broken but vivid. The moon's silver light illuminating these mosaic pieces, each piece reflecting my screaming emotions like the melody of a song. Chaotic but beautiful. The song of a scared soul. Battle of an armorless warrior. As my worried thoughts get louder and louder, like the thunder itself. I cannot control my thoughts anymore unless I conquer the storm. Can this insanity ever be cured? Wake up, I tell myself. Wake up.
Thank you, Alexander the 10th. And I'm going to have to say it's true. Just before I introduced Alexander, I was looking at the time. It's getting a bit tight. We've 5 left. Maybe we should make an announcement just to try and keep it a bit short because we don't want to keep the bar staff late. And then I called out Alexander's name and she's behind the bar. And I think, okay, that's that pressure fucking ease. Let's just drive on. Jake M. What's that? M. I can't pronounce the second name. Yeah. It's not that I can't pronounce it. I can't read it. That didn't help matters at all, did it? Fucking hell, sorry. Does that say Jake?
Jake M.M. Griffin.
Jake M.M. Griffin.
Yeah.
That's a rock star name.
Thank you. Hi, guys. Just want to plug my Instagram before I get started with this poem. It's at Jake Griffin is last. If you guys want to give me a follow, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you very much. So, this poem is called Heart of the Nuclear Buddha. Above a tattered valley of flattened Nagasaki, the heart of the nuclear Buddha sat happily. Only a statue, his values were blast-proof. In charred and stellar Zen, the third noble truth, Narodha from the sound of one hand clapping, Nirvana from the strike of 2 bombs dropping. Through right thinking, the mystics missed it. Is it coincidence? Or is it merely optimistic to see compassion form after a nuclear droplet? But yes, the Buddha smiled. Nothing could stop it. That or the eightfold path of atomization, total erosion of eros and all derealizations, but the realization dawned too late on man that most of suffering happens at his own hand. As the hands of Hibakusha fell to nothing, waste flesh, lotus tumors and cancer budding in the fallout radiation, they looked for something to ease the pain of their newly burning skin and that of the unborn children within, born deformed, cleansed of original sin, the metamorphosis, a hellfire baptism. We are become death, destroyer of worlds. This can't be the way karma unfurls. These weapons are not the arms of good guys, and I see no good in this grave price. They'll need no graves. They've been vaporized. Loving kindness pours forth and blinds. Unlike the melted people below his seat, the Buddha has long surpassed this reality. It's in the smile. The smile. A brass smile. Half scorched and alone for miles. That compassion isles. Thank you.
You say the Instagram handle is Jake Griffin is lost.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent name, excellent name. Moraid is next.
And this is my last day as a hotel waitress. That's the name of the poem, it's not my last. I took my last order from I took my last order from a manager who happened to
sorry,
I took my last order from a manager who happened to stay the night. I like her, but it was not poetic. My actual last request was from a couple who wanted more coffee. I brought them more coffee. It was not poetic. There were two tables left to reset, and I reset them. It was not poetic. I folded napkins for the last time, but it's not like I was signing them. It was not poetic. I said goodbye to everyone, but efficiently, like I might be in again, and it was not poetic. Allow me to explain, I am the kind of person who writes a poem about rain because I can't accept that it could just rain. But my last day as a hotel waitress, I opened the back door and it was dull and grey like a Saturday in January, because it was a Saturday in January. And the back door closed behind me because it is the kind of door that closes by itself.
Wrote a poetic piece that revolves around the phrase, it was not poetic. That's kind of genius. Thanks, Marriott. Antonio!
Hi, thank you. So this poem is inspired from different phrases that I catched from meeting my friends and on my Christmas holidays. You know, sometimes it's very nice spending Christmas with friends, but everything happens too fast. So good thing and bad thing happened together in this sort of weird mixture. So this poem is called Washing Machine. Washing machine rotates following a precise goal. Function one is for the wool. Turn on the program and switch, like the cancer of my father who passed away 2 months ago. Function two is for the cotton. There's a simultaneous rotation in the washing machine. My child now is 7. Nightmares come regularly on a beautiful and bright day. We got married last year, and now we live in a very expensive neighborhood in London. My mom has a cancer. I don't know how long she's going to live. Function three is for synthetics. I met this guy on Tinder. We had sex. Don't know what to do now. Me and my friends were completely drunk on St. Sylvester's night. Cancel that picture. I'll have to do that post again. Which are the right words to say to a person who is going to die? Abandoning someone is a learning process. Function four, full heat drying. Smelling the air after the fireworks with sulfur and fog. I can breathe. But there will be no George Floyd this time. The washing machine program is over, or maybe it's just started. open the dishwasher door and let your dreams fly out. Thank you. Thanks.
Open the dishwasher door and let your dreams fly out. No, it's 10 to 12. We have to finish at 10 to 12. We've got 24 people on the open mic. We have a 25th person on the list. If we invite them up to read, we're going to go into extra time. That's not really allowed. But the 25th person on the open mic this week, this month, is Michelle DeLay. Like, there's just no way we can go home without hearing Michelle DeLay. Come on. I was picking you up, Michelle. Come on, we're not going home without hearing you reading.
Get away, so hurry up.
It's only a short one, guys. Thanks for tonight. It was gorgeous. Thanks, Seth. And how are you now? Do black rings still frame the sun? Are they cartooning you again? Have they you tiptoed on a door hook, cuffed by your locker loop? Is your combed coral shirt? Is your combed cotton shirt coral blue or brilliant? Are your thumbnails clean while your palms are thinning? Are you drifting, picturing shrinking in mossy rock pool reveries? How long can silk tag soft, broken lips of winter haunt? Do you think of me or do you get to beaches anymore? Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. You've no idea how tempted I was to introduce you by saying we're just going to have it to maintain the gender balance. You've no idea. But I resisted. We're at the end of the night.
But
you and I get it, and that's enough. That's it. It doesn't matter if anybody else gets it. Fuck them. Who else got it? You got it? Okay. Healy got it. That's okay. We're at the end of the night. I want to say a massive thank you to Alexandra for being behind the bar and looking after us. Massive thank you to the Long Valley, as always, for providing the space for it. It's always it's a great venue, and it's worked really well for us for many, many, many years. So thank you to them. Thanks to Paul Casey for keeping me going, the legend that he is. Big thank you to all of you who contributed to the 5-word challenge. Congratulations to Cedric on winning and changing his name on the strength of it. Big thank you to all of you who contributed to the open mic. It was, as always, absolutely fabulous. Give yourselves a round of applause. And finally, well, not quite finally, but very close to finally, huge, huge round of applause for two wonderful readings by our two wonderful guest poets, Luke and Molly Toomer.